The other day, I was in a filling station to pay for a little bit of fuel. And when I came to the place, there was a magazine was lying on the desk. It was called Beautiful Home. I didn't buy it, but I just glanced at it. And they were just a very colourful magazine, very well presented. And I think it said 25 beautiful homes in Ireland, and some very nice design and exquisite furniture and very colourful fabrics and everything made to match and measure and coordinate and the rest of it. Beautiful homes. I came away thinking, was that magazine talking about beautiful homes, or was it talking about beautiful houses? Actually, I think they put the wrong title on the thing. Because in my limited understanding, there's a great difference between a beautiful house and a beautiful home. You say, do you believe it would be possible to have a beautiful house and not have a beautiful home? Precisely. I also think it would be possible to have a beautiful home and quite an ordinary house. You know, it takes a lot more than a house, a nice house. And it's a thing to be desired and to be appreciated and enjoyed. But it takes a lot more than a nice house to make a home and to keep a family together and to keep a marriage together. And I say that to young couples here tonight who will be having a home or do have a home and are getting it. In actual fact, you just keep your ear open and your eye open. When things turn sour in a marriage, instead of an expensive home keeping it together, it only makes the situation worse and causes things to become more bitter and acrimonious. So that we are thinking tonight not so much of the building or the house, but rather more of the family, the couple and the family. Let me take you to a beautiful home. Real beautiful home. It's a good distance from here. It's in a rather just a small market town on the edge of a river in Asia Minor. Just a town like Portadown, famous for its fabrics and its manufacture of wool, as Portadown was once famous for its linen. And just a few miles up the river, there's another town called Laodicea, and it too is famous for a different kind of wool. It's black, glossy cloth and so on. And this town, Colossae, it has taken second place to Laodicea, just the same way as Portadown has had to take second place to Lurgan. And so it's not a powerful big place. A market town on a river, its best days are past. 200 years before this, it was quite impressive, but the shine has gone off it. And yet in that little town, there's a beautiful home. We have read about it. I want you to think about the family in that home. You know, the head of that house was a man called Philemon, and he was a good one. The helpmeet in that house was a lady called Athaiah. And the heir in that house, just with one child, the heir in that house was a man called Archippus. And then they had a number of slaves. It's quite a place. This man is quite affluent, and he's quite well healed. And in the social levels of his day, he's He's quite well up there. He is also going to be able to prepare a guest room for the Apostle Paul when he arrives. He's not short of a pound, and yet he has a very godly, Christ-honoring, spiritual home. Wouldn't you like to have a home like that? You know, when Paul was talking about this man, Philemon, he said he's a brother. He said he's dearly beloved. He said he's a fellow laborer. Actually, he was a convert of the Apostle Paul's. Paul had never been at Colossae. It may be that Philemon had been on business or something in the city of Ephesus, 100 miles away, where the Apostle Paul stayed for 3 years or thereabouts. And Philemon may have gone there on business, heard the Apostle Paul and got saved. But Paul had never been here. But one of his converts is here as a key man in the assembly. And he's not only in the fellowship of the assembly, and he's not only in the family of God, as a brother, as dearly beloved, he's in the field. He's a fellow laborer. The Apostle Paul says, this is not a man that's allergic to spiritual work. He said, in my service for the Lord, he said, I regard this man as being with me every inch of the road and every step of the way. He's not only a laborer, he is a fellow laborer, a most commendable man. And he obviously has a house that's well ordered. You know, it's the responsibility of the man, of the husband in the house, to order the house. The world that we live in has put a bad name on male headship. But when God established the institution of marriage at the beginning, Adam was the head. And Eve was the helper. The devil tried to upset that, but that is still God's order. You know, his wife, Aphia, I think she was a good lady. All the Apostle Paul says about her is, he said she's, just I have to watch a thing here. He says, to our beloved Aphia. Actually, that's not the best translation. Paul wouldn't have referred to a lady who was another man's wife as beloved. If you look at Mr. Darby or Vice Version, any of the translations, they will change this to the sister Aphia. That's how Paul described her. He said, he is dearly beloved. But he said, as far as she is concerned, I'll just call her the sister. You get the same thing in Romans chapter 16, where the apostle's speaking about different people. He says, my dearly beloved Epaphras, and my dearly beloved Amplius. Those are two men. When he begins to speak about Persis, he doesn't say my beloved, he says the beloved Persis. Just a change of pronoun, a change of article. You know, that's a little thing that I would say holds a good lesson for us all. We need to be careful how we address and treat members of the opposite gender. As Christians, we should be friendly, but we should never be familiar. It's a common thing for younger believers even to call an older Christian lady by her first name. Everybody's common nowadays. Respect left this country, I reckon, about 50 years ago. And everybody's leveled out. And all idea of propriety and decency and dignity and a little bit of courteous manners has almost gone. I would say to younger Christians, you be very careful how you address particularly older ladies in the assembly. And all ladies, never have anything suggestive. I hear some comments made, and as far as I can judge, between male and female, some of them are too familiar and some of them are too flippant. And it's no use crying when the beans are spilled. And when we're reading out notices of discipline, it's no use crying then. We need to judge and stop some things before it gets as far as that. The Apostle Paul, you say, but Paul, why did he bring in her name? How many letters of his did he bring in a lady's name? None. Why did he bring in her name here? Well, for the simple reason that he's going to ask them to take back this man Onesimus that I'll be talking about in a minute. And if he's going to be taken back into the house, it's going to mean a fair wee bit of work for her. But you see, I thought this man, Paul, was supposed to be a woman hater. You see, I've been led to believe with what people say that this man, Paul, he was a misogynist. He had absolutely no thought for women. No, no, he knew that if this request of mine goes through, it'll mean a lot more work for this lady Aphia. So he considered the man's wife. He not only spoke to the husband, but he addressed this personal little letter to the man's wife. You know, it's a good, there are some husbands of no consideration for their wives. It amazes me. I was in a home recently. Quite a beautiful home it was. A beautiful house. They were very comfortable. They were very hospitable. They were doing very well. And there were quite a number of other folks invited. And we were there. It was all very nice. I couldn't say a thing. A beautiful meal. But the meal was just getting ready. And the lady came in. She was entertaining maybe for up on a dozen. Very busy time. And she came in just at 6 o'clock. And her husband was sitting up enjoying the crack and talking and entertaining us all. And she said the tea was ready. And we all rose just to go in at the busiest time of her evening. And he turned round, he walked past her at the door. He says, you better get some coal in the bucket and put it in the fire. Well, it took more grace than I could tell to keep my mouth shut. He has a business, this man. He might do that with his employees, but he should never do that with his wife. The man has little consideration for his wife. It was just so glaring, so out of place. The Apostle Paul is going to impose on this lady. So he gently brings her into the address of the letter. He refers to her. He considers. Do you consider your wife, dear brother, and who you bring to the house? All of those things, there are simple lessons. That's what helps a couple to survive, to keep together, to stay together, to serve the Lord. And they had a good boy, this boy Archippus. The apostle says about him, he says, you know, Philemon, you have a great man there. He says, your son, he says, he's a fellow soldier. He says, that son of yours, he says, they're so useful in the assembly, because you read his name again in the epistle to the Colossians, and Paul says the ministry that he has, he says, let him not be intimidated. He maybe was a wee bit shy, but he says, let him not be intimidated. He says, let him fulfill his ministry, your son. And he says, he's a fellow soldier. He says, I regard him as a comrade in arms. He says, you're a companion in the field. You're a fellow laborer. He said, he's a comrade in the fight. He says, your son is a stalwart. They'd actually had a little spot of bother in the assembly at Colossae. And some false teaching was circulating about, and things weren't so good. That's not my subject tonight. I think this was a man that defended the patch of lentils. This man, Archippus, or whatever you want to call him, I think he was a man that's... And you see, if Onesimus came back to the house, it would affect Philemon, it would affect Aphia, and it would also affect the son. So the Apostle Paul, so thoughtfully, he mentions these three people. I think it was a beautiful family. I'm sure there are families like that represented tonight in this meeting. There are some families, some men not married to an Aphia. Well, I'll not give you any other names or any other suggestions, but it's a great thing. It's a great recipe. The family that were involved in this household. If you read down the letter, you can see the features of the house. He talks about Philemon and his love. You know, Philemon's home was a place of care. He talks about Philemon and his prayer. And he talks about the fellowship and the communication of his faith. You know, this house of Philemon and Apphia, it was a place of care, it was a place of prayer, and it was a place to share. That's just what a Christian home could be. You know, around here tonight, around this section of Portadown, there are a lot of homes and there's very little prayer. You keep a wee touch of prayer in your home, it'll help the atmosphere, you know. It'll just keep things right. If you keep always from the home a direct line of communication, or you say, but we have got broadband installed lately. That's fine. Broadband will give you a line of communication with a lot of things. But there's a bigger line than broadband. Keep the lines of communication open with heaven. And he often speaks in the passage about thy faith, thy love, thy obedience, thy boldness. But when he comes to speak about the prayers, he says, your prayers. Not the singular pronoun, the plural pronoun. I take it that Apphia and Philemon prayed together. And when it was their prayers, the both of them were involved. I say, there are beautiful features. You know, dear Christians, I think we should still... That's my burden this week. The attack is on. In fact, I was noticing today, there's a new dictionary has just been published, and they've capitulated to what's presently so popular. They've redefined marriage. In the old dictionary, the definition was, marriage is a lifelong union between a man and a woman known as his wife. Fine. That's a good Genesis 2 description. That's a Genesis 2 definition. A lifelong union between a man and a woman. I think they said also known as his wife. The new edition says this. Marriage is a partnership between two individuals, often of the same sex. They have redefined it. You know, the attack is on. The attack is on Christian homes. And the attack is on biblical institutions. And dear Christians, if we are going to be able to stand against this, it's possible. In a city like Corinth, at Colossae, with all its corruption, and with all the Gnosticism, and all the false ideas that were filling the atmosphere, there was a home in that city that was just like a cameo of heaven. Your home could be like that. May God grant that there are Christian couples in the meeting that we will aim for this type of thing. The family in the home. The features in this home. You know, another matter that I want to come to is the focus in the home. Because you can read just this personal little letter. He not only speaks about Philemon and Apphia and the son Archippus. He says, the church which is in thy house. So their home was a place where the assembly was central. The assembly met there. As I said last night, and I don't want to go over it all again, that must have caused quite a disruption. It's all right having your home maybe for half a dozen visitors some Sunday night, a wee cup of tea after the meeting. Many of you do that, very commendable. It's very nice. What about having the whole assembly coming into your house? And all the furniture you have to move? And no, they had it there. They had it. He said, the church... Does the church be in your house? You say, no, sure, you told us last night we don't meet in homes, we have halls. Aye, but the church should be at your house. I believe it should be the exercise of every Christian couple, within their means. I know some are older, did their life at it. I'm not talking about that. I'll speak to younger couples. You should try and make sure that the church is all in your house. Oh, you say, but we are very friendly with Willie and Winnie. And they come to us every other week. That's fine. What about all the other people? You know, we should We should show hospitality. You say, but hospitality, it's not everybody's good at it. You see, hospitality in the New Testament is not an option. Every single believer is commanded in Romans chapter 12 to be hospitable. And an overseer is not only to be hospitable, he's to be given to it. He's to be out on the front line. And he needs to get all the church to his house. Not all at once, but in a year. It's a nice thing to have all the members of the assembly. You have to watch who you invite at the same time. You might have to do referee. But have them all. You might need the diplomacy of Henry Kissinger to keep them all there. But it's nice. It's nice. That's what he had. They had the church meetings, but that it kept a bond. Here's a man and his wife. Just think of how much this couple, helped by their son, were knocked out. You know, another thing that I would say, apart from this business of having meetings and having Christians in your house, the center of your home life, make it the assembly. Build your home. If the prayer meeting's on Thursday night, well, that's no problem. You not be end up doing your decorating on Thursday night. If the Bible reading's on Tuesday night, that's fine. You can do your wee bit of woodwork on Monday night or Wednesday night, but the Bible reading, because you'll build your home life around the assembly. The church which is in thy house. Many of us use our homes as the main thing in life, and the assembly's the hobby. These people, the accommodation of the assembly and the affairs of the assembly and the things of the assembly and the work of the Lord and the saints, that was not only was their home a place where hospitality was shown to the assembly, it's a place where hospitality was shown to the apostle. He was welcome. He says, Philemon, I say he hadn't been there, but he says, Philemon, he knew the type of the man. He says, I'll be coming all been well. And he says, you'll prepare me a guest place. You'll prepare me a lodging. And I know that the door was wide open. It's good to have a home where the Lord's servants are welcome. It's good to have a home where the Lord's people are welcome. That will help your home. Younger couples, I speak sincerely. That will greatly enrich your Christian testimony. You make a habit of it within your means, within your capabilities. You say, well, it's a bothersome thing showing hospitality. You can be sure it is. See, if the church was in our house, I wouldn't worry too much about getting them in, but I would worry about getting them home. For some people, when they get in, they don't know when to go out. And if they had a meeting and they were all there, that's very nice. But how would you get them home? Within reasonable time. It's very handy for us that we have a hall and the whole thing's over in an hour or thereabouts and we go home to the quietness. Altogether different in Eastern countries and in this setup. But here's a man and his wife and they put themselves out for it. And for the Lord's servants, well, I can't say too much about that. I have certainly enjoyed, experienced, witnessed hospitality beyond words in different ways. They give you a very big, you know, I've stayed in houses that were 4,500 square feet. You had a brave bit of room to stretch there. And I've stayed in houses that were less than 1,000 feet. Square feet. Just as happy in one as the other. And the Lord's people, whatever they have, you know, you don't need a big home to show hospitality. I tell you what you do need. You just need a big heart. And that makes a massive difference. People give you their best and sometimes more than their best. A while ago I was in a home and I wondered when I closed the bedroom door at night, I wondered why the wee dog scratched so much at the door. So I opened the door and the wee dog let up onto the bed. And then as I did a wee bit more investigation and when I tried to get him off the bed, he growled fairly ferociously. And then I discovered the rest of the story. The old man and his wife in their 80s were sleeping in the other room on the floor. They give Gilliland the bed, but the wee dog wasn't as spiritual as they were. It hadn't joined into the exercise for the preacher. It thought he should be in the bed where it always was. But I overcame that eventually. Once I got him out the door, it didn't open again. And another time, not so long ago, I was in a place, a very nice home. And I thought, this will be a comfy, cozy corner. And I peeled down the duvet, and there was a big cat just curled up under the duvet where the two pillows met. and there was a wee bit of excommunication took place that night as well. But people do their best and do more than their best. And I tell you, dear Christians, that's the kind of thing that helped the work to flourish in the first, the focus of this home. But you know, there were problems. We can't understand that. You say a home that would be so good, and the assembly so much to the fore, and the Apostle Paul so welcome. You see, they had an awful sad experience. There was a fugitive from the home, because Philemon had a slave, probably more than one slave, but he had a slave, and he robbed his master. That's a sore thing. If you have anybody, in Bible times, a slave was looked upon as part of the extended household. And this is all within the confines of a home. And this man robbed his master, and he not only was guilty of theft, but he absconded. He took to his heels, and he headed away, having committed this very serious crime. It was the death penalty. Was for the crime. He absconded and he went away to bury himself in the big city of Rome, 1,000 miles away. He would mingle with the masses and the camouflage of the crowd, and he would dodge about amongst, there was a whole area of Rome was called the slave slums. And this fellow, Onesimus, I say you'd say to yourself, I can't understand it. Why did he ever leave such a comfortable, stable, solid, secure home with such a rich, godly atmosphere and a caring couple like Philemon and Apphia? Why did he ever leave that and head away out into the wide world and go to the big city? Well, he did. It broke their heart, you know. Not just the loss of the money. That was a blow. But the loss of the man, in fact, at this very time, I would say at the very time that Onesimus was in Rome, maybe a few months before it at the most, there was a big slave owner in Rome, one of the government men. He had 400 slaves. Just to show you what they thought of slaves. He had 400 slaves, and one of them killed a man. And because he was a government official, they had a court case about it. And they decided they would kill the whole 400 slaves. And they took the 400 of them out, and they slaughtered them and made a public exhibition of them in the city of Rome. And when a man was caught for this, they put on his head a brand mark, F, fugitive, in the Latin word, or CF, cave, for beware of the thief, or else they branded him, and a man, if he caught a fugitive slave, could return to the master, and the master had 100% legal permission to kill him, and not even a question would be asked. So here's Onesimus, and he has cleared away off, and he has committed against Philemon a very, very sore crime. As I say, we hardly know why he left. There are some Christian homes in this meeting tonight, and you have had fugitives. It's possible that if I knew all the facts from this congregation, this little congregation around me tonight, there are mothers and fathers, and you give your boy a good home. You surrounded him with your prayers and your love and your care. There was many a drunkard and a drug addict's home, and if he had left it, you could have understood it. But a home such as you gave him, to the best of your ability, in the fear of God, the day came when he told you, I'm going. Maybe tonight you hardly more than know where he is. Maybe he's buried himself in some great city of this world. You know, young people love to get to the big cities. I can tell you they're not as exciting as they seem. The big lights and the big advertisements, the cities of this world, great metropolitan centres, they are also a morass of corruption. And I'm sure when Philemon and Apphia woke up to find the boy's away, and he has taken a good bit with him, I'm sure they said in the midst of their hurt, us him, we'll never see him again. But they would. Maybe that girl of yours that has fled your home, or maybe still living at home, but might as well have fled, as far there's no communion anymore, there's no communication, and they're just miles away in their whole outlook, and they've got buried in a way that you thought they never would be. Imagine this man Onesimus skulking around Rome when he could have been sitting in the sweet atmosphere of Colossae in Philemon. Maybe you're beginning to ask, have you done it wrong? I find right across the country there are parents, Christian parents, live on a guilt trip. And they look at somebody else that didn't bring the children to half the amount of meetings, and they got saved. We brought them to as many as we could, and they've just turned out to be real vagabonds and rebels against the gospel. And they sit and wonder, have we done? And then some that have seen them saved, they sit and put in their thumb and pull out a plum and say, what a good parent was I. I think that neither attitude is correct. Don't take too much credit, and don't take too much blame. You could destroy yourself. I'm sure Philemon and Apphia sat down at night and they analysed it. I wonder why he did that. We gave him everything, and we made him comfortable. There wasn't a household where a man could have been in a better position as a slave. It wasn't a good position, but it was the best house in which to be a slave, and yet he goes away. Well, they couldn't follow him. But thank God the Lord followed him. You see, that boy of yours that has become a fugitive from your godly home, and he's no longer living within the supervision of your spiritual care, and he's away and she's away. Well, I'm glad to tell you, dear Christian parent, that the Lord can follow them. Somewhere he got in touch with Paul. I don't know how. Paul was in captivity. He wasn't in prison in the sense of a dungeon. He was in captivity in his own hard house, and people could come and go to Paul. And just as things go, you know, it's an amazing thing how the hand of God can overrule circumstances. And this couple that never thought they would see Onesimus again, grace reaches them. Through Paul, the man is saved. He repents of his sin. It breaks his heart. His life is revolutionized. The unprofitable has now become the profitable. And Paul is just about to send him back. With what welcoming arms they would receive him. I tell you, dear Christian, the thing could change. You know, I have a friend in America. I have a few friends in America. But the one that I'm thinking about just now, he was the black sheep of the family. Very good family. The old man's well in his 90s, still alive. And I know him well. And some of you here know his name as well, but that's beside the point. Very good man, and kept the gospel first, and saw most of the family saved by the grace of God. But this one boy was a total rebel. He told me, David, I was a disgrace to my father. He says, I stole from him, and I cleared out. And he says, I got in with a bunch of boys. And he says, I went, we got an old van. Just wait till you hear this. I'll tell you this very quickly, or I could make a whole night out of it. He got into an old van, a bunch of boys, and they went round pubs singing, got away down into the southern states of America and boarded into Mexico City and all that. And there were two things that impressed me in his story. There was one night with this bunch of boys. He used to sleep. He slept with a big dagger under his pillow. He woke up one morning, the dagger was away, and he was still alive. Just could hardly believe it. But anyway, the old van that they were working in, there was something happened to the roof rack. They carried a bit of old banjos and stuff with them, and the old roof rack was falling to bits. In Mexico City, where there are 20 million people, and they said, we'll need a pair of pliers and a bit of wire to keep this thing together. And they saw an old shanty shop, an old hardware shop. And they stopped. And in all the millions of people and hovels and people living ever, they went into this place, the old fella, as withered as a prune, just standing withered with the sun age, and asked him, I should take the pair of pliers in Spanish and give them wire. And they went out and were working at the van. And within about 3 minutes, this old fella came out with a wee book in his hand. And he said to this son, that had cleared it. He said, son, He says, did anybody ever tell you that you need to be saved? He said, there's a wee book you maybe read with safety, certainty and enjoyment. He was gutted. He said, my father doesn't even know I'm here. He says, if my father knew the way I lived last night, it would break his heart completely. And yet he said, God is following me. You know, dear Christian parent, don't give up hope. That fugitive wandering boy might be far away from you, but not too far away from God. God follows people. Another thing that he told me that is a big thing. He said, David, I lived reckless and I thought I was enjoying it and let on I was enjoying it. And he said, people would have thought we're singing and shouting and drinking and reveling about. He says, you know, every Sunday, he says, I glanced at my watch and he says, when it came to 5:30, he says, I said, my father will be praying for me in the prayer meeting. He says, every Sunday, he says, it nearly killed me. He says, I knew the gospel meeting started at 6:00. And he says, from 5:30 to 7:00, every Sunday evening, he says, no matter what pub I was in or what company I was in, he says, my heart was bursting because I knew that my father was praying for me and preaching. You know, they mightn't be having as good a time as you think, dear Christian. I'll tell you a thing he did. This is a queer stinger for people like us. There was one Sunday evening he was in a... They moved away over and all this renegade thing that they were on. And they moved away over to an area where he knew within about 5 miles was an assembly. And he was at rock bottom. He had seen the old service of sin and Satan wasn't a good one. Just like Onesimus in the slums of Rome. This fellow was at rock bottom. And he went into a pub and he asked the man, see, have you a telephone directory here? And he looked up the address of a Christian that he knew, that his father was friendly with, in that area. And he phoned him up. And he was just, his belly was bursting that this Christian would say to him, hi, good to hear you, Joe. Joe's not his name. Good to hear you, Joe. Come round for your tea and you'll maybe go to the gospel meeting. And he says, if he had said that, I would have been there like a shot. But he says, I've had enough. He says, I phoned him up. Told him who I was. Told him I was so-and-so's son. Oh, he says, I didn't know you were in these parts. He says, I'm too busy. Put the phone down. And that man missed it. He missed it! That was a sinner looking for salvation, just wanting a wee bit of hospitality. And the man missed it. Philemon didn't miss it. He was a man with an open heart and with an open door and with a good wife. And as a couple, they had an earth, a little haven of heaven. Dear Christians, let us not despair. The criminal came back as a convert. The slave, the bondman came back as a brother. And God worked in a marvelous way. The etchings of his grace, the tracings of his providence. I say, you do what Philemon and Aphia did. Keep praying. Keep praying and God can keep working and reaching and you never know what the end result can. A fugitive from such a good house, you'd say, but if you were in a house like this, you would never leave it. I wonder why your children left your home. You did so much for them. But you have to remember, dear Christian parent, that there's a rebellious streak in human nature. It was in our own hearts. And sometimes people only learn by experience. Young people run away from home and they get into all kinds of free thinking and they think they're brainy and they think they know everything when they're in their late teens and 20s and they have to sow wild oats for a while. And unfortunately many of them, when they're in their 30s and 40s, they come back to believe the things they learned at Sunday school after years of life have been wasted. But it's merciful of God to save them. I want to speak about another thing. Because, you see, he's coming back. You see, this is going to be a change in this house. This is the boy that stung us. And this is the boy that stole from us. This is the boy that walked out. Paul's sending him back. He tells us he's repented. tells us he's got saved, tells us he's useful to Paul, but Paul's going to give him up, even though he's useful to Paul. Paul says, I'll sacrifice him, and I'm sending him back. Mind you, that was some challenge to Philemon and Apphia. The big question was this, will we forgive him? And I want to speak about the forgiveness of this family. They did forgive him. They did forgive him. They took him in. They took him in generously. They were within their legal rights to tell him, get out of here. Get out of here. If Philemon had, soon as Philemon saw him on the doorstep, if Philemon had carried the head of his body with a sword, the government would have been 100% behind Philemon. He had a legal right to keep him out and evict him. But now grace has changed the boy, and the boy has repented. The Lord has saved him. Will I forgive him? But he stole from me. It's going to cost me. You know, forgiving people always costs. It costs God a lot to forgive us. And thank God the moment that we repented, we got the forgiveness. And I'll say this, I'm talking in a family context. One of the biggest challenges that will ever come to your family is getting the grace to forgive old hurts. I have known families that were wrecked. I had occasion to contact a man recently about a thing because I'd met his brother. This is a Christian man. The brother is not a converted man. And I had a contact with this man. I said, I'm speaking to your brother. I said, the meeting's down the country. I said, he'll maybe come, you'll maybe... He says, I haven't spoken to my brother for 32 years. He says, well, my mother died. He says, he did a thing about the will. And he says, I haven't spoken a word to her 32 years. So you let him go to hell because of your mother's will. One of the biggest challenges that will come into you will be family feuds. And people that will do things, they'll steal from you. And not just maybe steal. They'll maybe steal your reputation. I've had people steal from me by gossip. It takes more than I have nearly to be bothered with them. But that's where forgiveness comes in. We who have been forgiven so much ought to be able to forgive. And I say, dear Christian, here's a family. This is a Christian family. This is a family where an atmosphere of spirituality pervades the whole family atmosphere. And when this challenge comes, they can rise to it. You know, many don't rise to that. There are people in this hall tonight who have carried grudges for years. And there's nothing will put your marriage under stress. You maybe have to forgive your wife. Maybe your children. Maybe your cousins. I'm not going into family feuds. It's none of my business. But Paul knew when he was speaking to Philemon, I'm speaking here to a man and the very grace of Christ. You know, there are people, dear brethren, I don't know. There are people and they're so bitter and wretched. I wonder if the grace of Christ has ever touched them at all. You think of that story, I know you've heard it often enough. About the boy that got the brother and his little sister and the snake come out and bit the boy. And he had to be rushed to hospital quite ill. And the wee girl, his wee sister, was quite upset and emotional. And she said to the doctor, doctor, is a snake bite? Is it going to kill my big brother? The doctor says, no, dear. He said, the snake bite will not kill your big brother, but the venom might. You know, there's some people here, and you got bit years ago. You were hurt. The bite won't kill you, but the venom might. Some have still the venom in their veins, in their memory, in their souls. And they're boiling, and they're bitter, and they're malicious, and they're revengeful. All of that spite. Oh, I tell you. Well, I better say nothing more about it. All I'd say is this. You know, it cost Paul, because Paul had to let Onesimus go. And he says he was useful to me. Eh? He says, when I'm here in captivity in my house, I suppose he could run and do messages, and he maybe did a bit of writing for Paul, because slaves were educated in those days. He says, I found him very useful. But he says, if you take him back in, I'll sacrifice him. He says, it'll cost me. And he says, it'll cost you. And he says, it'll cost your wife. And it'll cost your son, Archippus. He said, it'll require generosity on everybody's part just to exercise forgiveness. But I think here's a family of sterling quality. And that's just what they did. Another thing I want to mention as I fairly quickly hurry to a close. I've talked about the family in this house and the features of the house and the focus of the house and the fugitive from the house and the forgiveness in the house. I'll say just a little word about the freedom in the house. You see, Paul knew that I'm asking this man Philemon to do something, to do a big thing. Now he says, I can't tell him to do it. But you say, Paul, you're the apostle. He says, apostle or no apostle? But you say, you're an older man. Older man or no older man? He says, I can't force him. And he says, I'll not enjoin him. He says, I'll just gently request. I'll suggest it. He says, I'll not command it. But he says, I'll encourage it. He says, I have to remember that he's the head of that house. And I'm outside that family. And he says, I'm either an apostle, a preacher, a minister of the new covenant. I'm this, that, and the other. But he says, it was his family. He says, I have to keep my distance. And he says, Philemon, now, he says, what I have suggested to you, he says, I know. He says, I know I'm asking a tall order, suggesting a tall order. And he says, without your mind, he says, I wouldn't do anything. He says, it's up to you. But he says, it's your house. And he says, I wouldn't interfere. You know, there's a thing about family life, dear Christians. It's a great thing to know that we can't interfere. When it's somebody else's family, I might have an interest. If I'm asked, I might make a suggestion. But that's as far as it goes. One of the things that has put families into great trouble and put couples into great collisions is too much interference in each other's household. You learn, dear man, husband, father, that your family, your house, that's your patch. And your jurisdiction doesn't go to other people's families, no matter who you are. Preacher or pastor or potentate, whoever you may be. And Paul respected. He respected this man Philemon and his wife and his son. And he says, I'm asking them to take a boy in. Now he says, I'll have to leave it up to them. And they're free. They are free. They have no legal obligation to do this. And I have seen a little dear Christians and observed. You'll forgive me for being so down to earth in these meetings. But I have seen many Christian couples and their marriage and their family joys put under strain. You know, I see people can't, sometimes people, there are some families can't live without the others. They live in each other's houses. They live in each other's pockets. They're always on the phone. They're shopping together. They're living together. They're traveling together. They're holidaying together. And they're just so much in the top of each other. It's only a wee while till there'll be an explosion. Out of all bounds and wreckage everywhere. Don't get too close. Always remember there are family boundaries. And that would save many, many a difficulty. You say, well, as I close, You say, what's the future for this family? Is there any future for the family? I look around here tonight, I see children, husbands, wives, parents. Some of the men who are husbands and parents are also overseers. That puts a bigger spotlight on their experience. One of the things that really always tugs at an overseer is his family. He can't really get away from either the light or the shadows that they cast upon him. So we have sympathy with that, and we pray for overseers. As I've said already in the meetings, family life is under serious attack. The family unit is the basic building block of civilization, and marriage is fundamental to that family block. In the world, things are disintegrating. The moral morass into which we have recently plunged is because family values have been eroded and biblical definitions have been set aside and scriptural standards have been jettisoned for a much more permissive way of thinking and way of acting. Dear Christians, it's abominable. School teachers come up against it. You parents that are raising children, all of those things, I don't get involved in them. But we get back to the scripture. Is there a future for family life? How did the Apostle Paul sign off this letter? He signed it off with a prayer. He said, "The grace of our Lord Jesus Christ be with your spirit." And the "your" is plural. He says, "Listen, Philemon. Listen, Aphia. Listen, Archippus. Mother, father, and son in this beautiful home." He says, "If you're going to be able to continue with all these challenges," he says, "it'll take grace." Dear Christians, it won't be easy. Getting those children will not be easy. Keeping a healthy, holy marriage and a happy marriage. I hope there are no Christian couples in this meeting just tolerating each other. A happy, healthy, holy marriage, it won't be easy. The odds are stacked against us and the culture around us is totally inimical to these standards that the Bible promotes. Thank God grace is sufficient. I hope you parents will have grace. I hope all of us who are husbands will have grace. And the wives and the children to fulfill our different roles in a world where so much is gritty and smutty. Thank God for the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ. It can be done. Even in our day, it could be done in the market town of Colossae in the first century. It can be done in Market Portadown in the 21st century. And we have looked at these godly couples that counted. Let me just give you the summary and then I'll pray. This is what it can be. On Monday night, it was a couple that composed songs. Zacharias and Elizabeth, what great hymns they produced. They composed songs. On Tuesday night, it was Zebedee and Salome. They contributed sons, gave two boys to be disciples of the Lord Jesus. On Wednesday night, it was Ananias and Sapphira. They covered sin. And mind you, it counted. It counted as a sad minus. Last night it was Ananias and Sapphira. They consecrated service wherever they went. They did their best for God. As a couple. A childless couple, I take it. Tonight, as Philemon and Aphia, they didn't travel. They stayed put. Some people travel with their jobs and are a great help wherever they go. Others never leave the patch where they were born. And they had one son. They cultivated spirituality. Had a home. a home that was just a little microcosm of heaven, were love and security and prayer and a welcome for the Apostle Paul and his principles and a spirit of forgiveness and an atmosphere of grace. It was all in that home. Maybe I should suggest to the magazine for beautiful houses, beautiful homes. Somehow or other, I think if I give them the picture of this home, they wouldn't be interested in it. They're looking for something more glitzy. Dear young couple, it's not the furniture in your home will make the difference. It's not the curtains. It's not the drapes. It's not the decor. It's not the interior design. That's not the recipe for a Christian home. It's a far deeper thing. It's a far sweeter thing. It attracts the commendation of heaven. May God grant that every one of us will aim for it in a way that would be for his pleasure. When all around is just a notion of corruption, may God make every Christian home in this meeting tonight an oasis of godliness and purity and blessing. Shall we pray?